A 4-mile journey from the cathedral city of Ely, or a 12-mile ride north from the university town of Cambridge along the busy A10 road will bring you to the small village of Streatham. From there, journey westward on the A1123 road for 3 miles until you come upon the village of Haddenham. Here you will find the home of the Farmland Museum. Haddenham could be described as a crossroads village, growing from the point where the tracks from two causeways meet, one from Erith to Hillrow, the other running from Willingham to Aldworth. These two were once the main entrances to the Isles of Ely from the west and the south. Besides two early references to the settlement, one in an early Saxon record dated 970 and the Domesday Book, Giles Kingsley, in a romantic novel entitled Hereward the Wake, sets the scene of a battle between the Saxons and the Normans at Aldworth, a mile to the south of Haddenham. At Aldworth, the Normans built one of the causeways, which in the end brought the conflict between William the Conqueror and Hereward the Wake to an end. In recent times, a mixed farming community has cultivated the productive land, with arable farm crops on the fenland, and fruit, flowers, and horticulture on the highland. Although the area is predominantly agricultural, the residents of both Haddenham and Aldworth find their locations convenient for commuting to Ely at 7 miles and to Cambridge at 15 miles, and some even journey to London to work. Here then, standing on one of the Foo Hills in the Fenland area, is Haddenham, and down its high street at number 50 you will find the Farmland Museum. This museum began as a child's collection of bits and pieces during the summer of 1969. People's kindness has resulted in an ever-growing collection of exhibits, and money donated continues the original aim of helping children who can't see and can't walk. Running costs, including rates on the buildings, have to be met. These are covered, hopefully, by profits on the sales of books and souvenirs. The majority of the larger exhibits are to do with fen farming. Smaller hand tools echo the hard work done on local farms before the days of mechanization. The blacksmith and wheelwright shop is furnished with original tools and equipment, and is in use on most open days. The new building, erected by much voluntary labour, contains rooms depicting how we used to live in Haddenham, a display of items connected with the history of the village, and a special area for temporary exhibitions of artwork and pottery. The original garden shed is now housing items of natural history, rocks and fossils found in the locality, together with items brought back from abroad. The Farmland Museum is open to members of the public on the first Sunday of each month from 2 p.m. until dusk throughout the year, and at other times you can visit the museum by special arrangement. In the year of 1978, nearly 5,000 people visited the museum, and a grand total of £516 was raised for children in need. What makes this venture unique is that one whole family, Mr. and Mrs. Delanoy, along with their 3 sons, started this mammoth venture in the back of their garden. And what a venture! An acre of land standing on fenland soil represents the very fens themselves in times gone by. Our host on this tour will be Kevin Delanoy, eldest of the 3 sons, whose knowledge of local history would befit a man 3 times his age. Here now from Master Tapes recorded for FenProbe Special Productions, the tape service for the visually handicapped in East Cambridgeshire, is a 1.5 hour recording of this fine museum, to complement the brochures on sale. We hope it will remind you of a pleasant visit to the Haddenham Farmland Museum.
Well, the museum is run specifically for charity. All the money we raise goes to charity. We're open first Sunday of every month, and the profits, so to speak, that we raise from these open days all goes to Children in Need of Help, which is an amalgam of various charities where no money is spent on administration. All of it goes straight to the children themselves. So as opposed to ordinary charities where you get some spent on administration. All the money goes direct to the children who we're raising the money for.
That sounds quite good. What gave you the inspiration to start the museum up in the first place, Kip?
Well, it was my smaller brother, actually. Dad was in the garden, and he collected the pottery, broken china and that, and put it in the case and announced, "This is my museum, full stop." Mm-hmm. Put it on his bed, and then various friends and relations had to pay 2p to go in through his bedroom door to look at this pottery. And he had two boxes, those who can't see and those who can't walk. And at the end of the holiday, it was a 6 weeks holidays when he started it, he got the princely sum of about £3, which then went to the Highfield School and the Palace School in Ely. After that, the local farmer said, "Well, I've got a plough if you want that." And so that came and was painted up in its original colours with a silver share and all painted up blue and red as it should be. And then the other farmer says, "Well, I've got a cart. You can have that if you like." So that was painted up too. And gradually, it's just grown from there. So then we moved out of the bedroom into a garden shed and we had our own table in there. And now we've completely taken over the garden shed, and that is purely archaeological finds. Natural history at the other end of it, and we've now spread out into the garden where all the implements are being stored.
Which is about roughly an acre in size, isn't
about
it?
About an acre in size, yes.
And is it absolutely covered in exhibits, well, nearly covered in exhibits.
Oh,
it?
Yes, it's quite funny when you come in an open day, or in the really big ones in the summer, It's absolutely covered with people. They just sort of stream down the garden, you just wonder where they're all going to go.
What makes this museum different from other museums, would you say, apart from the fact that it is a family who's running it?
Well, active participation by visitors, I think. A normal conventional museum, you have a glass case and you're not allowed to lean the glass cases, and there's signs everywhere. Here, things are laid out, and anything that can be used, we try to use, so thereby demonstrating it, and people can see as they're supposed to be used. Things are laid down, like the case we're standing in front of now, for example, the children's pastimes, all that's set down on a low level, of about 2 feet off the ground.
So small
children can see it. And, you know, we like people to touch things and that.
Could you explain?
Providing within legal limits.
Mm. Could you explain what you've got in this case?
In the case, it's all children's toys. There's the old spinning top, the stone marble solitaire board, the wooden dumbbells. There's the old slate boards and the slate pencils that they used in schools before the chalk and paper came along.
Good heavens.
And the old Fen Runner skates, which they used to have really hard winters years ago. And my grandma still tells me about my granddad skating to work. He used to have to skate along the Fen Rows on his set of runners.
And these are a piece of timber. Well, they used to screw these onto the ordinary shoes, didn't they?
Well, it's a piece of timber shaped approximately like the sole of your shoe, with a metal runner set at 90 degrees to it. And the metal runner, of course, was the surface which contacted the ice, and it was strapped onto the bottom of your boot.
And you screwed this to your shoe, did you, or your
boot? Yeah, this was screwed to your shoe or your boot, and then you could take it off and screw it back on again, providing you've got the hole set in your heel for the screw to go in.
Oh. And we've got some old lead soldiers there.
The old lead soldiers and an old model tractor, with being the farming area and the plains.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite interesting, young visitors come, and I think he's a boy of about 5, came and said, "Excuse me, Mr. Dalmore, you've got planes with one wing, but you haven't got a plane with two wings," you know. They obviously take interest in these cases and notice things. And if something's new put in, you quite often find a small kid saying, "Hey, look, it's new, there's something new here." And it's the fact that we've got the cases down on the low level.
Mm.
You know, a lot of museums are all sort of made for adults.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's dead boring for children, whereas here there is a case laid down, or there are two cases, in fact, laid down for children down low.
Mm.
And children are encouraged to sort of come and see, you know, because after all, it is them who in the next generation has got to look after this sort of stuff.
Mm. I like this wooden hoop, if I have really.
Oh, the old wooden Victorian hoop, yes, and with it the spade from the seaside, and used to be able to go down to Stanton and find these floating in the sea, very simple mass-produced type spade.
Yeah. With the round hole in the
round hole
handle.
In the handle, and just made out of one flat bit of wood with slightly scalloped ends.
Get their fingers. Mm-hmm. Now take us round, Kevin, and show us a few more of the exhibits. What's this building we're in now?
This is what we call the new building. It's erected with donations and help from a lot of people. All built by voluntary labour. And we've had people here laying bricks in the summer. One bloke, Mr. Keith Gatwood, builder in Cambridge, has been a great help. He was here almost every Saturday without fail for almost half a year building it. And he laid all the bricks and we built the foundations. And we had blokes with PhDs, college lecturers, and everything, you know, working on this one building in front of a stall, which we raise money for the museum, for museum upkeep, because things are getting so expensive now. We do receive some help by countries like Shell Chemicals. They supply us with dentist fluid, which we paint on the plows to preserve them, but a lot of the stuff we have to buy ourselves, so we raise money through this stall, selling books on the museum and things like that. Directly behind us, we have a case here on war, which is of interest to a lot of the blokes and their sons coming.
Did you get these from local people?
A lot from local people, local war medals and that, but some of the stuff which we've been given by the army, we've got like hand grenades and landmines and that, which add a sort of bit of dimension to the case and a bit of diversity, you know, for young people,
mm-hmm.
which is the interesting part about it.
You've got stuff here dated from the middle of the 19th century, haven't you? 1862. What's that, a water bottle?
Yeah. We tried to get a fair cut through the mm-hmm. through the actual each war, which allows a build up. We work from this end where we've got a water bottle, 1862, to this end here where we've got some sand from underneath the first atomic bomb that was let off in the desert in America, which was given to us by a professor in Cambridge, which then brings us up from the simple arm to arm combat to advanced nuclear warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's this just, you know, we haven't covered everything, but no. We've just given a cut through the section. And although we can't specialise in anything, what we do, we sort of specialise in agriculture. We try to give a bit of diversity for visitors, because if you don't like agriculture, boy, have you got a job on, like on the other side of these cases.
I like this cover, the fit over the car headlights and the blackout. Now, how on earth did people still have them? You know, you thought they would have thrown those out ages ago.
Some people keep everything. You know, you sometimes get people coming up with things which they've kept, like that German dagger there, that was some bloke was shot down in a plane, and that was his last resort, this dagger, and the Home Guard caught him, and the dagger eventually found its way to us.
And people actually give you these exhibits, they don't lend them to you?
Well, some are lent, but the majority are given,
mm-hmm.
because they see here is a place where it's going to be preserved longer than their lifetime. And it's giving a lot of people appreciating it, you know, instead of having it in one cupboard where perhaps a visitor will see it. Here, lots of people are appreciating it. And it's also raising money for charity.
I noticed to your left there's a bomb dropped on Croydon in 1942. I take it that's...
not like the Danger UBX or anything like that. Yes, yeah. That is perfectly safe.
Croydon, which Croydon was that? The Croydon in Cambridge or the Croydon in London?
London, I should think, because that was given to us by the army.
Oh, I see. Shall we move on? This is interesting. You've represented here what it must have been like in the old kitchen. Is this the old kitchen or the scullery?
Well, the entire display by itself represents a Fenn farmhouse in a way.
Can you explain what there is? How many sections and what there is?
Yeah, here we have a typical scullery with the mangle, the old washboard, very early washing machine, and the old boiler built in. I mean, and it's all laid out with the old flat irons on the wall and an old rack coming down to dry your washing on, and the dreaded blue bag which you use for washing.
That's right. The old dolly.
And the big brass tap. Yeah. It's laid out as a typical Fenn scullery would be.
They must have had some rare muscles in them days. Look at those flat irons.
Yeah. Big old gals, as they say. Yeah, they were.
Yeah, and the old mangle.
Yeah, next door we actually have a model here built of a Fenn lady in a kitchen with an old open fireplace, with the table laid out and the old knife cleaners in the days before stainless steel knives, just steel knives, where the knives had to be cleaned.
Where would this be done, in that machine? Though?
Yes, the knives were put in through the various holes and the handle turned. There were two buff stones on the inside, and this was cleaned. The old spits and things like that, and all the old pots and candlesticks, and the servants' bell let in on the ceiling, you know, demand service and that. Yeah. And we've got the model actually set up cooking on a table with various eggs and...
Mm-hmm.
Very early potato smashers and things like that.
Never smashing those, though.
No, pre-packed stuff.
She seems like a nice girl, doesn't she?
Yeah.
We move on.
And here we have the master of the house sitting in his chair. The actual model was a sort of Hepworth-style bronzed LSD quartz I own a Lotus type guy, and his head was removed and given to Ann Biggs, a local artist, who built up his face to a typical Fenn character with a weather-beaten face and grey hair.
So he was actually a young dummy, wasn't he?
He was a young... Yeah, he's sort of gone down in the world, rather like Britain, I think, you know. And he's built with his leggings and typical Fenn trousers and his boots and that by the fireplace. And he's, in fact, reading about the general strike on a really old newspaper.
That's the Early Standard, is it? Is that the Early Standard? Probably?
Yep.
And the that's dated standard. What? I can't really say. No, I don't think
no.
1926. Oh, dear. And there's an old Cat's Whisker radio over there, isn't there, dude?
Oh, yeah. Well, we try to bring in things where we can't move our house. Let's stick them in here. So we've got the old... An old Cat's Whisker radio and the old Singer sewing machine, the pedal type, the old fireplace.
I love his clock, glasses.
And his ear trumpet, you know, he's slightly
deaf. He's got an ear trumpet, has he?
Oh, yes, he's a slightly deaf character, you know.
It's marvellous. You've even got the old harp here, haven't you? The old
all the old harps built in, you see, yeah.
It's marvellous.
And the really magnificent sort of Victorian cast iron type harp.
And so to the children's bedroom, I take it.
Children's bedroom, yes, indeed. Again, with the fireplace built in for heating, no sense leaving these days. And the small child getting into a cot with a doll.
Mm.
And
I like the cot, it's long, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it's quite an old one.
Yeah.
And the
all cast
small
iron.
Children's clogs that we used in the fens, the small clogs.
Mm.
Bedroom to an actual sort of science department here where we've got the coils for crystal set, magnified for 9-inch television screen and things like that, and above them aerial views of the fens, showing the flatness and the great acreage of land, and an aerial view of Haddenham, which is a help to visitors because they are now sort of looking at the village in which the museum is and the respective area.
It certainly is flat, isn't it?
You
know, when you're driving, I mean, you appreciate that it's flat when you're driving along a country road, but seeing it from here, it's like one giant runway, isn't it?
It's the best place to buy a car in England, they reckon.
Yes, it doesn't wear the
gears are ever used.
Yeah.
It's the Bedfords now, and with the washland in between, because the majority of the land is under sea level. Mm. Next door, we move on here, just to show how diverse the museum is. We've got which from the early computer made at Cambridge University. That's an 8-bit unit, and a bit unit is a function in the actual computer, and the unit's about 2.5 feet long by 6 inches by 6 inches, sort of like box. And it was made with valves.
Yeah.
And we've got them coming down right to the present day, where there's a disc here, less than a millimeter thick, and about 1.5 inches across, which does the job of...
It's a silicon chip.
100,000. Well, that's a multiple silicon chip, which is the latest thing out. And that does a job of 100,000 of these things, which is interesting for young children. There's also a plaque here from Pioneer 10, which shows two human beings. And this was the spaceship which went up, and on the off chance of finding, it's gone out of our system, solar system itself, on the off chance of finding life and showing us where we came from, that we are a fairly advanced
species. I like
this.
It's got the Gessler tubes.
Yeah, named after a German glassblower. Mm-hmm. There's a vacuum in between these tubes, which are glass, and they're bent to varying patterns. Electric currents pass through them, so in fact you get like a cathode ray tube with a neon tube, and it creates the colours in the circle. Here, a section before plastics were used, it's entitled, and shows the various bottles with Kirkstone rum butter and delicious potted meats and Sainsbury's bloater paste in before the days of the mass producer.
These are all ceramic pots, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they've all got their own trademark
and respective labels. And at the bottom here, a water filter, which water was poured in the top and it filtered all the various impurities out, and clear water came out of the bottom in the days before sort of piped water.
I like the, what's that, Virob? A preparation of bone marrow.
Ideal fat food for children and invalids, you know.
Marvellous, I like that taste tonight.
Here we have the old sewing machines with various mechanisms.
You've got about, four of those, haven't you? Five?
We have four, yes. There's a collection in the village which comes down on various open days. Mm. They have a large number of sewing machines and great many types.
That gentleman in question is one Ralph Carpenter, who himself lives in the village at Ten Hop Row. Ralph has over 60 sewing machines in his collection that date from 1865 to the present day. And if you ever need your sewing machine repairing, then get in touch with Ralph, because he did tell me that he doesn't only restore them for himself, but he also repairs sewing machines for other people. So here's Ralph Carpenter then, and his grand collection of sewing machines.
Well, here we've got just over 60, which includes toy ones, and mainly domestic ones, and one or two industrial ones. We was hoping to get more out, but the weather...
Because don't you have these on display at the Haddon Museum sometimes?
We do sometimes, yeah.
Remember,
yeah.
Kevin Delanoy told me that we've seen Kevin.
Oh, yes, yeah. Mainly on Ladies' Day, because I have a Ladies' Day down there.
And they date back from how?
Well, this is the earliest one we've got, which is 1865.
Mm-hmm. It's sold for £10, I see here.
Yeah. And it used to be an extra 10 shillings if you wanted a polished case, as opposed to an unpolished case. And they come up more or less to the present day.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get interested in these?
Well, it was that little decorative machine in the middle there that was the first one we bought, because I always thought a sewing machine was a sewing machine, and that was it. And then I thought, you know, that looks interesting. Mm-hmm. And we started to sort of take more notice of them and sort of gather up information about them. And
because you repair them, don't you?
I do, yeah.
You do,
I do.
That's a handy thing. It's a free advert for you.
Yeah. I don't collect them as a result of repairing, I repair them as a result of collecting them.
I see.
Which quite interesting, really. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all timed like I'm a motor engineer by trade, and they're all timed up much the same as an engine. You know, everything has to be timed to happen at the right time.
Basically, do they all work on the same principle?
Yes, they're all mainly the same idea. Mm-hmm.
Do you think today's sewing machines are going to last as long?
Oh, no way. No way, Ali.
Because they're here from, 1876, I've seen. Wheeler and Wilson, there's quite a few of those about, aren't there?
Yes.
What, is that an American company?
Yeah, the Americans really take the credit for the invention of the sewing machine. They done most developments of it and that sort of thing.
Where's the Singer? I haven't seen the Singer.
There's a Singer down
there.
Oh,
good, I'm glad we've got a Singer here somewhere.
And I don't know if I've got any more here. I've got several more, but, you know, if the weather was better, we was going to put more outside. But actually, Singer done a lot of idea pinching from the man that originally invented them, although he seems to have taken most credit for the sewing machine.
Because his original one is on display at Paignton. Have you ever been to Paignton? It's a town hall now. It was his house originally, and the first machine he ever made stands on display.
Oh, in his house.
Poster, yeah, it was about 12 years ago. I'm trying to remember back. But I think it's now the Paignton, what do you call it, town hall. Something. It's the best town hall in the country, because it's really an old ancestral home, you know, the Singer.
Yeah, that's right. He retired there, didn't
he?
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
mainly for men it's entitled, with the old devices. There's a dealing pistol and no end of pipes, clay pipes, cigarettes, and the real Yankee weed tobacco, which somebody had still had left over.
How long did the clay pipes used to last? I mean, you're always digging them up in the garden, did they?
Yeah, you're digging them up a lot, but they smoke them down to a very small length of stem. There's a tail of one bloke.
They used to break off, did they?
Oh, they'd snap off, yes. Mm. They used to have a tail of one bloke who just went to see his mother, and he said she was smoking the real old tobacco, the real strong stuff, and she'd only got an inch stem on her clay pipe, you know, so very economical in those days. Here we have lamps, a section on lamps with the various policemen's lamps, bicycle lamps, Davy lamp from the bottom of a mine, the old acetylene lamps where you had to put water in and powder underneath to form the gas to burn. Beneath that, a section on domestic machinery, where there's the old sausage maker for the old Fen farmhouses used to make their own sausages. And the sausage meat was minced and then forced through the skins, and they used to make their own sausages. Above that, two man traps in the days when we didn't have that much respect for human life, poachers and that.
Can you explain the size of these man traps, sir, Kevin?
Well, about, 4.5 feet long with jaws about 2 feet
deadly looking,
wide, and a big plate about 2 feet square, which was then trod upon, and these jaws snapped up. And there's some here with teeth on about 2 inches long, which meet in the middle and completely sever your leg. And here there's one which I suppose you could say was a humanitarian. That only just sort of crushed your muscle and left your bone still intact, but they really are something.
And I suppose people would be in these traps for ages, wouldn't they?
Depends how lenient the gamekeeper was and whether he came around and let them out.
Mm.
But they...
Oh, he wouldn't always let them out if he found them.
Oh, they might, but, you know, it just depends. We had a bloke come who said, well, surely if you get in that, you can stand on the spring and get yourself out. Well, he was a fairly small bloke, so we carefully let his foot go in this one here where there is a gap between the two jaws and let it shut, and he was in there comfortably, but he couldn't push the spring down once his leg was in because he couldn't twist it, so they'd surely got you going once you were in there. Here we have a section on Haddenham itself, with two plaques from Arkansas School in memory of the two teachers, which actually came from the school, which is now our village centre, and have been let into the wall for local people, with various composite photographs of local windmills, the area, flood photographs. And
this old is 1947, isn't it?
It's a 1947 flood, so really disastrous.
It's like floods. Looking over some giant lake, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And they were floods indeed, and they flooded a lot of the Fen. Haddenham itself, being on high ground, wasn't really affected, apart from the fact that a lot of animals were brought up into the Fen, brought up onto the high land. An interesting tale about these floods. Was so much money was received by government assistance, and there was a lot of sort of insurance swindles go on, and farmers who had old wooden clapboard houses claimed and got new brick ones back, and as the story is recollected by one character I know, they had an old sack on the floor for a carpet, and they claimed and got a new carpet back, and their chairs had sort of wonky legs, and they got new chairs, and he said to me, we shouldn't have brought all the animals out into the Fen, we should have took them and put them all back in it. And here, just to show our diversity again, we have a model built by Harold Cooper of Willingham of a steam engine.
This is the Haddenham chap who built the models, isn't it?
No, this is another bloke who came here on a summer open weekend and had the engine going. And he went home and said to his wife, well, that's the best day I've had in my life with my steam engine. He said, when I die, I want the engine to go there. And in due course, the engine did arrive.
He comes from Willingham, this
He time. Comes from Willingham, yes. And it's an engine and a drum which he has built. A scale model, absolutely superb. And above that, we have the RTV, the tracked hovercraft, scale model too, just to show the Fens, you know, in their old era with the steam engine thrashing and the agricultural aspect. And then above it, the tracked hovercraft, it was a shame, yes. That really should have been continued, especially now with the new innovations coming from abroad.
How many people do you get here during the course of the year, Kevin?
We're standing now in front of a board, which is four figures, which show four people. 1978, for instance, last year, we had 4,779. And our total since we were open as a museum,
which is now,
1969, is now 27,607, which is gradually increasing. Now, bearing in mind we are only open 12 afternoons in a year, we get a total of about 83 visitors per hour we're open, which in respect to other museums, because they have increased opening hours, is rather high. This is probably because we are the only agricultural museum in Cambridgeshire as such, and it does attract a lot of visitors.
Do you hear from any other people who are running the same kind of idea?
Yes, a lot of other museums are starting up along these lines, but the largest one was around here was the Stowe Market East Anglia Museum of Rural Life, and now one's been started up at Gresham Hall for Suffolk. Both these museums indeed receive financial help and have full-time staff, which means they have the ability to redo things. But we here, being a private museum, we have to rely on help on that. What's more, their money doesn't go to charity, as ours does, you see.
Yes.
And so far we've raised, since 1969, we've raised £2,563, which we hope by next open day should have increased dramatically. But there, you know, that's how it goes.
It's certainly an awful lot of money to raise, isn't it, Paul? And with seeing how it started with such small beginnings with your brother.
Well, yeah, here it is, the original collection as such with the pottery below. And it's just due to people's kindness and donations that the museum itself has grown and the amount raised for charity has grown. And hopefully both will continue to thrive.
Now we're outside, you're going to take us around and show us the exhibits that you've got in your massive garden here. But first of all, you're going to tell me about how you used to take people around in the beginning, weren't
you? Well, when we were smaller and the museum was smaller, you were allocated a boy as such, and he gave you a guided tour, so you really went and saw everything. But now, as the museum has grown, it's not as such, and you'll just wander around, and there are people there if you want to ask questions. We're just walking by an engine shed where local stationary engines, which were used on the farm for powering various machines, have been housed undercover, and so they're better preserved, and various people work these engines and allow you, you know, you can see them all working in working order.
They actually work, all those engines.
Oh yeah, they all work. So sometimes a problem with one or the other, but we always try to get them to go.
Lovely morning, isn't it?
Oh, super.
Such a change. They tell me that not only have you got us visiting you, FemPro that is, we've also had a lot of television companies.
Oh yeah, well, as it is interesting, and the fact that children are actively involved, when we've had programmes like the Saturday Banana and Why Don't You Switch Off Your Television Set and Do Something Less Boring Instead visiting. But we've also had larger programmes like Bygones, which where it would fit. And we've also had Mr. Dave Allen, the Irish comedian, come. And he spent a day here filming, and we were on Dave Allen and Friends, the programme, which is rather nice because it gained us a bit of publicity. And we don't receive any financial help from anyone. In fact, it's quite the opposite. They rate us. It's rather hitting because our buildings are large to accommodate things like carts, which we're standing in front of now. And, you know, it's more of a hindrance than a help. And the money which we have to pay these rates with is raised with pickles and selling comics on a stall. You know, it's a bit ironic that the only thing we're only trying to preserve and all they can do is hinder, which is a bit sad. But perhaps in time, with a little bit of luck, it might alter and they might come to our side, you know.
Yeah.
It should do in a decent world. Anyway, we're here now in front of a mobile demonstration which we've built, farm machinery as it's on it, with the mangel wurzel cutter, which was the mangel wurzel was fed to horses, and a chaff winnower which separated the wheat and the chaff.
Yeah.
A chaff cutter which cut the straw up into chaff, which was fed with mangel wurzels to the horses. And an oat roller which rolled the oats for animal feed.
Well, actually, it is a mangel wurzel.
A mangel wurzel is like rather large turnip, sort of red in colour, which was grown purely for a crop for feeding while store feeding.
Is it
feeding.
Still grown?
Some small farmers still grow, and we get our supply from over in Littleport. We only sort of get through about 4 mangel wurzels a year. But
they have a lot of mangel wurzels over
there. They taste very nice too, Will.
Yeah. The actual display trolley it's on,
yeah,
it's mounted on two little bogey units from the water board.
Yeah.
The platform's then mounted on this, and we've got two tracks coming out. It's not like a great ceremony, you know. We really ought to have a signal box set up, and the entire thing rolls out, and it is a large display. It's, in fact, what, about 6-7 feet wide and about 15-20 feet long.
Yeah.
It is a big display, and this thing rolls out and sits at the end. There's a small fence around it because the actual machines on it are dangerous. And this rolls out, and everyone can see them working, which is the interesting thing, you know, to actually see these things working instead of a static display.
Yeah. Marvellous, and it's marvellous to think that they're still working.
Oh, yeah.
And how old would they be, would you say, Kevin?
Varying age. Some are still used now, like the mangle cutter used by horse people who have horses and that.
Yeah.
And the chaff cutter's used sometimes. But it's very hard to date something like that because they were produced, you know, for like 20 years on the run and you're not quite sure where yours stands. But the display as such, all of them were used in farms about 60 years ago, at least, you know.
Marvellous to think that you've got there before.
Oh, that we've got them, that's the good point, yes. And they've been saved and preserved, and here, hopefully, they will remain preserved and everyone will see them.
Can we move on now to, you've got a nice display of carts.
Oh, yeah.
Are these given to you, or are these?
Both were given to us, these carts. One a typical Fen cart, and the other one is more elegant in design, and it's got various supports and that added and beautifully carved. We are still on the search for a wagon. We cannot find a wagon, which we'd rather like, but now they're becoming so much collector's items that you have to pay high sums to get them. As you can see here, there is great potential for artwork, because with the various wheels, and we've got a reaper in front of us now, which used to cut the wheat before combines and binders came out. And we have had various schools come to look round, but we're finding it too, you know, it's too hard now because we get no help, as I said. And we just can't afford to drop anything because both parents are at work. We can't afford to drop anything and show them round. So if financial aid is given, then perhaps open the museum one day in a month, purely for schools and the artistic
value of
the place. And through learning, especially for Fen schools, is quite considerable. For instance, here we've got a celery banker, which looks a lot like a snowplough. And for the local crop of celery, Littleport being the centre for Britain, this was used for banking up the celery. And they are unusual. In fact, there's a celery roll there, a very specialised roll.
And this would be drawn by a horse?
The entire section we're looking at now amounted to some 75 horse-drawn implements, are all drawn by horses.
And they stretch all up to all up to your house there?
All up to our house, It's about 200 yards. There are potato bankers. There's a very comprehensive sugar beet section, which is quite interesting. That we've got a really good cut there. There's cultivators, hoes, a section purely devoted to potatoes, harvesting and setting.
Mm-hmm.
And we've covered a lot of them. The crops, there's a grass cutter here, you know, for the hay and that, and various attachments for ploughs.
Have you ever approached any government institutions to try and get a grant?
We have filed with the local county council, but they have said, because we are a private museum, they can't afford to give help to private bodies, you see. Now, if we turned over to a trust, we'd have to give our garden as such and all the shrubs and that in it to this trust, and it would therefore be their property, and we'd have to open so many days in the year, and it's so inconvenient. Whereas now, as we are running it, it's crippling as it is, because what we could have done with the money which we spend on rates would be great. We could preserve more things, we could develop it, have more scope, more people could come and see it, we could be open more often. When you take into account, as I said, 83 people per hour, that's good going.
And if our listeners wanted to come, when are you open?
We're open the first Sunday of every month. And
that's winter, summer?
Winter, summer, yes, all the way through. And things have been constructed, so there's no trouble in getting in. You can come and you can feel the things and look at them, and we don't mind that, you know, providing you inform us beforehand, if you like, or just turn up on the day. We'll certainly...
What time are you open?
We're open at 2 o'clock until dusk. There'll be people to come around. There are lots of people around in the museum, and they can show you around and you can feel the things and do what you like, you know.
Yeah. I was talking to your father, and he said that because you were running it as a charity, you'd had more help from police and other bodies than if you'd been...
Oh, of course, yes. We get more help from everybody in that way.
Because it's down a high street. How do you get on with cars, Father?
Well, we have our own... Well, our Princely Summer, five... little columns which says police parking on not on this side, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And providing on people are like sheep, providing you get four cars parked on one side, we have them go all the way up the high street. And we say don't park opposite gates, but we very rarely have complaints, you know, just because we are run for a charity. And this is a great help, you know. Because we run for a charity, we get the help and we get the cooperation.
Mm.
Whereas if we were running it for a profit, well, we wouldn't. We wouldn't run it for a profit because it's exploiting things which people give them to us. But if it was, I'm sure our help would be dropped and perhaps county councils would be a bit harsher on us.
How many people actually do help you?
Hard to place numbers.
Have you got a club or...?
Oh, no. People just turn up when they like. And there's a job for anyone. We did start museum work days, and we then found it was only the regular people, the usual people.
Hardcore.
The hardcore who turn up. You know, so it was sad in a way because... anyone can work here. There's a job for anyone. From about 60, we've had people working to about 70, you know.
Mm.
Women, men alike, but they just don't turn up, you know. And we have to be here regardless. We have to be here the Saturday before an open day. And in the summer, when you consider this acreage of grass, it's a full-time job. It has to be cut nearly twice a week.
It must be very difficult cutting the grass, Kevin. I mean, because you've got to move every implement.
Every implement's got to be moved forward, then cut, and then moved back. And it's a full-time job, and we're wondering what's happening now, with all of us now at school knowing to work hard, and I'm on for A-levels.
How old are you, Kevin?
Well, I'm 16, coming on 17. Mm. You know, I'm working on an A-level course. It's fairly intensive.
Mm. And the family's helping?
The family, well, there's five of us, three boys and parents. But fortunately, we've got a lot of good friends, varying in ranges from about eight upwards. And providing you're responsible and your grade is responsible by us, We went on holiday last year, and one of Craig's friends just sort of popped in and had a word with my gran, who lives next door, going to cut the lawn. She knew him. Of course, off you go. And he did, you know, he cut the lawn. It was absolutely marvellous. And it's things like that, you know, that you appreciate. But as I said, the grass is a problem, indeed. And when you say everything has to be moved forward and then moved back again.
Mm. It's set out in lovely grounds, isn't it? I mean, you've got conifers growing up. And...
oh, yeah. Well, the garden as such, we had a visitor come who knew us when we were small.
Mm.
And the fact the area which we're standing in now was once pig paddock, which probably explains why the grass grows so well. Mm. And he came and they used to plant shrubs. And he's just come back from America. He'd been there about 4 years. And when he went, the shrubs were little things about 6 inches tall. And now he comes there. We've got some really tall shrubs, and they're now growing into one another, and these beds are really nice, you know. And some people come and say, A, we come for the museum, but B, we come for the garden.
It's done in the middle. It is like an avenue, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's built deliberately like an avenue.
It's an avenue of trees and an avenue of farming places.
Yeah, the two nicely mixed.
Yeah.
Well, not nicely mixed if you're quite tall and you're cutting the lawn, because you hit your head on branches and that, and some of these flowers are quite heavy.
I noticed you've got an observatory up there.
Oh, yeah, that was... it was a bit sad. That was Dad's hobby when the museum started, and as you could see, the museum won, so to speak. So he stopped now. He doesn't work on that anymore. He used to stargaze as such. But
because from the outside, from the main road, it doesn't look as if there is much, is there?
Good thing.
Garden house. And
it's a good thing in a way. It must deter those, vandals. As it is, they'd have to have an oxyacetylene torch to cut up the stuff we've got and make a big
impact. It's a heavy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We have now come to the end of side one of this recording, so could you stop the machine, reverse the tape, and side two should start almost immediately from now.